Thank you. Thank you. Again, I'm Dan Gibbons from the City Club of Chicago, and it's an honor to have all of you. I mentioned the sponsors a little bit earlier. We always like to give a sampling of who's in the room as well. Here at City Club, we have a number of elected officials here today, including Alderman Walter Burnett, Alderman Anthony Beal, Alderman Brian Hopkins, Alderman Greg Mitchell, I just saw. Alderman Mitchell. And excuse me, if there are any aldermen that are here that I didn't mention, please give me a shout. He's a representative, though. Walter, no, I mentioned Walter Burnett. Of course, our vice mayor. Yeah. Thank you. We have Representative Cam Buckner here with us again. The Chicago Public Library Commissioner, Chris Brown. Council General from Ireland, Brian Cahalain. UIC Chancellor Mary Lynn Miranda, welcome back. I believe Mary Ellen Karen from After School Matters is here. We have a number of developers, and there are a few that are regular City Club folks, so I'm going to mention those. I'm not going to get all of you, of course, but Al Friedman is here, a great friend to us at City Club. Quentin Primo is here. Zeb McLaurin, Leon Walker, Lee Golub. These are some people that really make things happen in Chicago. We've got philanthropists here like King Harris, Andrea Sands from the Chicago Community Trust, Cindy Mollis from the Pritzker Traubert Foundation, Marilyn Gardner is here from Navy Pier, David Greising from the BGA. So many amazing people. Smita Shaw is here, great civic leader. Some folks from the Obama Presidential Center, Josh Harris, Corinth Jackson's here, I know. I believe Megan Hart is here from LISC. And then we have a couple of special, of course, Michael Fosnock. I mentioned a couple of folks from Clayco and also World Business. But we have a couple of former planning commissioners here that I think are, it's fun to acknowledge. We've got David Doig and David Reifman. And I think a lot of these folks here and most of us here would argue that we miss another former planning commissioner and City Club board member in Lori Healy. So she's with us always. And, you know, our city lost another legendary leader recently who was laid to rest yesterday, and that's Sister Rosemary Connolly, who founded Misericordia. So this probably isn't really within my purview, but I'm going to call on our fellow Chicagoan, Pope Leo XIV, to fast-track her canonization on behalf of Chicago and the City Club. How about it? Sister Rosemary, I don't know of anyone on this earth who has done more for the special needs community, and it was an honor to have her here at City Club many times over the years. Thank you, Sister Rosemary, and thank you for all that you've done for so many incredible people. On that note, we also have another angel looking over Chicago today, and that's Officer Crystal Rivera. At this very moment, her family and the Chicago Police Department family are laying her to rest. So please keep our first responders and our public servants in your thoughts and your prayers as we all go about our days doing what we do to, you know, make this city better. What we all do matters. So thank you for that. Thank you to all those incredible folks who have done so much for this great city. Our guest today is also a public servant. She's not a first responder. She's sort of on the opposite side of that. She really is charged with planning the future of this city, with plans that, as I imagine, we're going to hear more about, include jobs, development, policies that will hopefully improve our city for generations of first responders, business leaders, community leaders, and the like to enjoy. So. She's been mentioned as a shining star in the Mayor Brandon Johnson administration. She's a great friend of City Club. After she shares a few remarks up here, I'm going to join her and sit down for a conversation. So please welcome to the City Club, Chicago's Commissioner of Planning and Development, Sierra Boatwright.
Thank you. Thank you, Dan.
Of course.
Thank you, Dan. Good afternoon, everyone. I'm really excited to be here today. I've sat in this seat watching amazing leaders go forward. So these are big shoes to fill, but I am so proud and so excited to tell you what we've been up to in the Department of Planning and Development. So I'm going to start off with a brief 10-minute presentation, and I'm going to actually make sure you guys time me to keep me honest, on 10 really important themes that you all should all be aware of coming out of the Department of Planning and Development. And then Dan and I will sit down and we'll get into detail on some of these themes. How's that sound? All right, I'm going to jump right into it because we've got a lot of ground to cover. All right, I'm going to kick off this conversation with the LaSalle Revitalization Initiative. This initiative will create opportunities for Chicagoans who want to live in the heart of the city, regardless of their income limitations. This $900 million investment leverages $320 million in TIF. It removes 60 stories of vacant space from downtown inventory across six high-rise buildings, creating 1,750 mixed-income apartments with 30% affordability right on site. We're restoring vibrancy in the Loop while building the most mixed-use downtown that Chicago has ever seen. And that takes us to number nine, downtown mixed-income office conversions. The private market is doing exactly what we anticipated the private market would do. The office-to-residential conversions are more than just an idea. You all, these projects are advancing. Let's all forget the urban doom loop threatening U.S. cities. We've got six additional non-subsidy-assisted conversions moving along. We're talking about $1.1 billion of new investment between the city-assisted projects and the non-assisted projects. That's new investment right in the loop, creating over 2,500 new units across 12 conversions. Under this administration, Mayor Johnson's leadership, DPD and our development partners are collectively rebuilding one of the most vibrant downtowns in the United States. Private investment will continue to seize opportunities throughout the central area. Number eight. There's a ton of development opportunities downtown, but the opportunities don't stop there. We've got opportunities throughout Chicago's neighborhoods, especially where the city owns surplus land. This summer, DPD will begin issuing new requests for proposals that will replace vacant city-owned land with mixed-use, vibrant development opportunities. The poster child for these RFPs is at the Plymouth and Van Buren site, adjacent to Pritzker Park, a site that's ripe for high-density, transit-oriented development. In addition to the Plymouth and Van Buren site, we're issuing three additional RFPs on Madison, just west of the United Center, on Cicero, between the Stevenson Expressway and Midway Airport, and a key site on 87th Street near the Dan Ryan, with additional RFPs to follow by year end. The city is leveraging its resources with RFPs to make a meaningful difference. Number seven, mega sites. I'm sure many people in the room are aware of a couple mega projects that haven't advanced or advance as quickly as we've all hoped that they would. We'll chat a little bit more about those sites with Dan shortly. But there's one mega site under Mayor Brandon Johnson that's advancing at quantum speed. It's the $8 billion Illinois Quantum and Microelectronic Park on the former U.S. Steel site. It's nearly 400 acres of contiguous vacant land. That's larger than Lincoln Yards, the 78, and Bronzeville Lakefront combined. This project is breaking ground this summer with Psi Quantum as the lead tenant to the south and Advocate, the first new hospital on the south side in over 100 years, joining the site as the anchor tenant to the north. And we're not done. The 1901 development will transform a sea of parking lots surrounding the United Center into a vibrant $7 billion multi-phase development that includes a brand new music venue, a new hotel, retail, ample open space with thousands of new housing units coming online. Let's talk about another game changer, the 78. And the newly announced anchor tenant, Chicago Fire's world-class $650 million soccer stadium. You all, this will transform the 78. Number six, let's cut some tape. A common theme through all these investments is Mayor Johnson's Cut the Tape initiative, which is streamlining multiple city processes to save time and money. For example, over the last year, DPD, we've reduced plan commission application timelines from 135 days to 79 days. We've proactively rezoned 2,000 parcels along major corridors, as piecemeal zoning changes are expensive and time-consuming. We've reduced evaluation timelines on city-owned parcels from 6 months to 1 month, and we've reduced right-of-entry timelines on city land from months to days. And I've eliminated redundant design review meetings. We've gone from 3 design reviews to 1 design review, and we will never, ever sacrifice architectural beauty in our city. So welcome to the new light speed era at City Hall. Number 5, missing middle infield housing. Here's one of my favorite subjects. Missing middle market rate housing. Most of us are aware that our South and our West Side communities have less than half of their 1960s population. In fact, over the last 60 years, Chicago has lost population that's equivalent to Boston's current population. So we're working hard to reverse those trends with new missing middle buildings. DPD's new initiative just started at the end of last year in North Lawndale before expanding not to 1, not 2, but 3 Southside community areas, South Chicago, Chatham, and Morgan Park just this spring. We're making city land available and leveraging the mayor's housing and economic development bond to incentivize construction of 750 new units over the next couple years. Now, 750 doesn't sound like a ton of units, but it's important to note that more density equals more economic vitality and increased public safety. We're simply priming the pump and creating opportunities for density, repopulation, and wealth building by activating city lots. We're building community wealth where it's needed most. Number 4, the Housing and Economic Development Bond. You all, the Housing and Economic Development Bond is a game changer. It's a game changer not just for our missing middle initiative. It's a game changer for businesses in need of financing. As many of you all know, access to capital is one of the biggest barriers for businesses to grow and scale. I can now use our Housing and Economic Development Bond to provide pre-development dollars to help turn great concepts into amazing projects ready for funding. I can also provide dollars for job training anywhere in the city of Chicago. I am no longer restricted to healthy TIF districts. Our new workforce solutions increases our geographic reach by 1,000% across our city. That means mom-and-pop businesses, mid-sized businesses can now take advantage of much-needed training dollars to hire and train a local workforce. Our new financial resource provides unprecedented leverage for real neighborhood growth. Number 3, community development grants. We're still focused on providing grant support to impactful neighborhood projects. In fact, under Mayor Johnson's administration, we've awarded over $100 million in grants, supporting more than $350 million in new neighborhood development. This map shows how widely dispersed our grants are. It includes projects like Revolution Workshop that just opened this month, and After School Matters, slated to open early this fall. Every dollar of city funds leverages $3 in private funding. I'd say that's a pretty good return. Number two, planning studies. DPD is more than an economic development organization. We're the city's lead planning agency. This slide identifies all the recent and ongoing planning work that's ensuring that local neighborhoods have the right land use plans and other resources for contemporary deep investment. Once adopted by the Chicago Plan Commission, these plans become official roadmaps for neighborhood improvement. Our plans all share a common theme. The future is now, and it's time to get to work. Number one, Plan Commission. This is my favorite slide of them all. This slide reflects Chicago's Plan Commission activity over the last year and a half, but it's really about the future and what's to come. Plan Commission is required for some of the city's largest development projects, and in 2024, we approved $11 billion in new projects. That's more than 2022 and 2023 combined. What that means is that you're going to see more cranes in the sky, more shovels in the ground, and ultimately a lot more ribbons cut. It's important to note that in the first 5 months of 2025, Plan Commission has already approved more than $8 billion in new projects. You all, we're laying the foundation for robust construction with thousands of new housing units coming online and tens of thousands of new jobs. Collectively, these major development projects, our corridor plans, our missing middle initiative, our grants, the cut-the-tape efforts, our RFPs, activation of our city on lots, and our downtown office to residential conversion have us on track to eclipse a population of 3 million people for the first time since the 1980s. I'll stop now, and I'm excited to chat with Dan.
Taking notes as I learn that. I'm going to push this back.
Okay.
And if you would take that seat.
Okay.
Push this back so everybody can see okay. This thing on. You answered all my questions.
Oh, sorry. I guess we can wrap up.
We can all go home. thank you for that, Commissioner. You did answer all my questions, but you ended with something I was just taking a note on.
Yes.
Is that true? So 3 million, first time since 19, could you just repeat that?
Yes.
Population stat.
Yeah, 3 million people in the city of Chicago, the first time since 1980. Fun fact, that's before I was born. I've never seen 3 million people in the city of Chicago. I want to remind us, though, that Chicago is planned for 5 million people. At our peak, we hit about 3.7 million people. And so we're at 2.7. 3 million people isn't outrageous. I think we have to have aggressive goals and plans to get there. And I think we can't just hope for that. We need to lay the foundation so that we can actually achieve that. And some of the examples that I showed on the screen are efforts that are currently underway to ensure that it's not just a hoop dream, but it's actually a strategic plan to actually increase 3,000. We've got to put vacant lots back in productive use, Dan. We've got 10,000 city-owned vacant lots. That's an opportunity for us to get... Thanks, Dave. That's an opportunity for us to get those vacant lots back on the property tax roll and back in productive use, and we certainly can do it far more aggressively.
I put him over there intentionally.
Put him back there.
Well, that's, I mean, that population growth is, it's something that answers all of our questions. It answers the funding issue. It answers... We have so much, we still have space. I mean, it's a great city on this beautiful lake.
Yes.
We have space to develop. We have these projects coming. What are we missing? I think a lot of the holdup that I've heard is investment, and that investors are overlooking or recently have overlooked Chicago. Is that the case? Are you seeing any improvement there?
No, you know, and I'm concerned that notion doesn't acknowledge the developers and the investors that continuously choose Chicago. And so what you saw on that last slide was our plan commission pipeline. That's investment, and those are developers who choose Chicago. I want to just set the tone here. The challenges that we're seeing from a development space, they're not specific to Chicago. These are national challenges. Interest rates are high, capital's constrained, and we've got tariff threats, right? Left and right. And so those, you know, three different things are a perfect storm to delay development and investment. I'm encouraged when we have our plan commission meetings and we have our concept meetings and our local developers, and not all local developers, because some of our conversions are from the East Coast that have chose Chicago, they're committed. And we're committed to figuring it out with them. And it's not just the big, shiny, mega projects. It's also those small neighborhood scale projects that matter. And so some have argued that Chicago is a flyover city for investment. I don't know that I agree with that. I want to push back on that. I think it's the way we talk about the opportunities. I think it's the way that we talk about the pipeline. You know, should we see more cranes in the sky? Yes, we will see a lot more cranes in the sky. But I don't want to minimize the commitment that our partners and our investors have for Chicago's growth and economic vitality.
I think we'll get back to some of these mega projects, but you mentioned some of the smaller projects. Just here at City Club, we have a couple of regular members. I don't know if they're here today, but who are doing their part. And since they've been coming around to City Club, they've figured out how to make use of grants. Mm-hmm. Two of our favorites, Blue Azul. I think, yes. You know, I saw a post recently building a facility out on the west side in Ida's Artisan Ice Cream. Now, these are folks that didn't think that they could ever get a grant. They didn't think they were civic leaders. I remember calling them out as civic leaders, and I said, how am I civic leaders? I just look at what you're doing. You're employing
Absolutely.
People. You're investing in Chicago. Your question is, These are smaller projects. These aren't mega projects. They are significant. Why are they so significant? What are some of those smaller projects, and how are they making a difference?
They're making a huge difference. You heard me mention $100 million of investment over the last 2 years, 18 months or so. That's supporting $350 million of new projects. That's over 250 projects across our city. You saw where those projects are. They're dispersed throughout the city of Chicago. We've got 77 community areas. We've got 50 wards, and we need to ensure that the dollars are going throughout our city, not just in a couple community areas. And so those committed partners, those are folks that are from the city. Those are people that are from their neighborhoods. And instead of saying, hey, I'm going to leave my neighborhood, they're saying, I'm going to double down and invest in our neighborhood. And the city will absolutely always be supportive of those partners, those stakeholders, those businesses, those developers that double down and continue to choose the south and the west side, the north side and downtown. They're worthy of investment. The communities are deserving of quality, robust, thoughtful development. And those projects are doing just that. I mean, you mentioned Blue Azul. You all, this is off 79th Street. I grew up off 79th Street. This is a game changer. It's not just a community center providing safe, supervised recreation. It's emphasis on mental wellness. This is an opportunity that our kids haven't seen in a long time. And so we absolutely will continue to support those type of projects. And it's not just community centers. It's restaurants. It's new medical facilities. We just awarded a grant last month for the Southside Birth Center that's focused on maternal health. That's a huge deal.
I want to also mention that Allison is here from the Illinois Medical District.
Yes.
You know, there's a lot
one of
going
our amazing
there,
partners, yes.
To come there.
Yes. And so there's so many opportunities, and it's just not one industry or one type of development or one neighborhood that we're focused on. We're doubling down. I mean, to be honest, you know, our grantees are always so delighted to receive the grants, and we're just as honored to be able to support their vision and support the overall growth and equitable development across our city. It's an honor. Mm-hmm.
And I think it's hugely important for people to know that that is available.
Yes, it is. Can we talk about that? It's always available. Can we talk just for a second?
Yeah, please.
Let's talk about community development grants. I get excited. Thank you. I get really excited talking about the community development grants for a couple reasons, because access to capital is a huge challenge for development. It's a challenge for small businesses. And we've got a new tool in our toolbox that we didn't have before. I only had 10 minutes, so I didn't have a chance to spend a lot of time talking about this new tool. But I want to take a couple seconds and talk about the Housing and Economic Development Bond. If I put on my developer hat, I'll tell you that we use TIF. And TIF is a good tool when it works. But we see so many examples where TIF doesn't work as well as it could and as well as it should. You may be in an area that's not a TIF. You may be in an area that doesn't have a healthy TIF. That does not mean that your neighborhood isn't deserving of vibrant, impactful development. Now, with the Housing and Economic Development Bond, I'm able to go beyond TIF districts. We're able to make deeper investments that's far more flexible across our 77 community areas, with emphasis on the South and West sides, because those are the neighborhoods that have historically experienced deep, deep disinvestments. And so, in essence, we're able to right economic wrongs from decades past and really focus on vibrant, impactful, sustainable, equitable development across our city. So I've got a new tool. I need every tool. I'll still use TIF. But I need every tool in the toolbox to really go as deep as we need to go.
And are any of those tools at risk right now with what's going on federal administration cutting back?
Yeah, so for my department, I'm not heavily dependent on federal resources, which is good. I can't say that that's the same for every city department. But I think that's just an example of how we have to leverage multiple tools. You know, some developers in the room have heard me talk about lasagna financing. We can't rely on just one source of financing. And that example that I gave earlier, our over-reliance on TIF doesn't end well. And so just like we shouldn't be overly relying on TIF, I would argue that we shouldn't be over relying on any single source of funding to bridge, you know, some of these gaps that we're seeing for development opportunities.
And on that, I think it's worth mentioning. We've talked about mega projects, but look, you've got people like Joe Mansueto,
yes,
who is taking money that he has made and investing it in our city. That is the Ricketts family has done that. So let's talk sports for a minute. You know, the Ricketts and the Cubs have done that. The, you know, the Reinsdorfs and the Wurtzes are doing that now with 1901 and with the West Side. Actually, they really kicked off the whole West Side development with the original development of the United Center.
That's right.
So here we are now, and maybe we start with Mansueto and the Chicago Fire Stadium anchoring that 78. Is that going to happen? Are we going to make that the 78th neighborhood of Chicago?
It's going to happen.
Awesome.
I mean, it's going to happen. Right? No, it's going to happen. We're talking $650 million of new investment. Does the plan look different than it was originally proposed? Yeah. And I think that's okay. You're talking post-pandemic realities, and so we're applying hindsight and really thinking about these mega sites in a different way, right? The planning will look different, and I would argue that it should look different. And I think it's pretty incredible that we have a partner like Chicago Fire that's saying, I'm choosing here.
Yes.
This is an amazing anchor, and it's not just the world-class stadium that's going to go on that site. We're talking about amenities, retail. We're talking about new housing. This site will be transformed, and it's awesome to have them as a lead anchor. Yes, it's going to happen.
Sure.
I'm going to say it two more times. It will happen.
That's great. If you noticed, I didn't mention the Bears in all of that, and it's only because I know you don't have an answer to what's going to happen there. Any updates on that?
No, here's what I'll say. I've said this before and I'll say it again. I believe that any sports team with Chicago in its name should be in the city of Chicago.
Yeah.
Now, I want to double down. And when I say the city of Chicago, I don't mean Chicagoland. I don't mean the Chicago suburbs. I mean Chicago proper. And so whether that's the Bears or any other team, I firmly believe that this is the best city and our team should be here in Chicago.
So maybe one of those potential stadiums could anchor another mega development. What's on the horizon for some of these that are in the mix? They're still, maybe the plans have been rearranged a little bit. Give us a couple of insights on other mega developments.
Yeah, I'd say, you know, when we think about a couple projects, let's name some of the older mega developments that you all are familiar with. These are all pre-pandemic development sites. Bronzeville Lakefront is an amazing site. That project is going to maybe look different than it did pre-pandemic. We're in constant communication with our development partners, whether it's Bronzeville Lakefront, whether it's Lincoln Yards, the 78, clearly we're in constant communication. We're doing weekly meetings with the team. Those sites will look different, and different is okay. Right now, we're working hard to right-size these sites post-pandemic. It's nothing wrong with things looking different. I'll give an example. The 78, Lincoln Yards. When we think about the plans for Lincoln Yards and the amount of open space, we would never be able to, office space, we would never be able to support that amount of office space today. We're talking roughly two Willis Towers that were proposed for Lincoln Yards. Did it make sense then? Yes. Does it make sense now, post-pandemic, where we've seen a massive shift from folks working remotely? Doesn't make as much sense. And so when we see new plans emerge, I think that's okay. I don't think that's a failure on the developer's part. I don't think that's a failure on the mega sites part. I think that hindsight, well, is always 2020, and I think those shifts are appropriate. So whether that's the 78, whether that's Bronzeville Lakefront, or whether that's Lincoln Yards, I think working collaboratively with our developers to ensure that we're getting things right and that we're not afraid to make shifts, but we're also not willing to compromise impact. I think that's okay.
And you mentioned office space and different habits. Are people coming back to work downtown? Are you seeing more interest in, you're talking about converting buildings to residential. That's right on the sale. Mm-hmm. So there are options for some of those buildings. But are people coming back, and is that something that's important to all this plan?
They are coming back, but I want them to all come back. I think we need that foot traffic.
There are a few people in the room that would agree.
Just a few. They were pretty quiet. But I think that we're seeing an uptick in foot traffic downtown. Is there opportunities for more companies to return to the office? Yes. I think we want to see that. Our restaurants want to see it. Our retail wants to see it. But we do see an increase. The other thing I think is important to note is when we think about our office spaces, some have asked, are you converting too many buildings? It's 12 buildings. These are 12 buildings that are vacant. Some of these buildings are historic. We've got a lot of office space, and so we're not converting too many buildings so that if everyone comes back to the office, there's nowhere for them to go. We've got ample opportunity and space. But yes, I would love to see a lot more foot traffic downtown. I would love for a more aggressive return to the office in our city. I think that's important. Is it necessary for our city to thrive? I think it's pretty important, but I think we're going to be okay. I don't know that we'll ever return to the office at pre-pandemic levels, and that's okay. It'd be nice to see, but I don't know that it's absolutely mandatory.
And I imagine that the conversion, I guess it was not a full conversion, but the Google office from the James R.
Yes.
Thompson Center, that hopefully will spark some
absolutely.
That activity, right?
Absolutely. And it's going to be a
project.
Beauty, and it's moving fast. And I would say also J.P. Morgan's investment. I mean, we've got deep investment. When we talk about J.P. Morgan, when we talk about Google, when we talk about new businesses choosing Chicago, when we talk about our conversion, that's more eyes on the street, that's a lot more foot traffic, that's going to help support our restaurants, that's going to support our retail, it's going to increase safety across the loop, and it'll turn the loop from my office monoculture to a real neighborhood that it wants to be.
And I think some of that is music to ears of many, including, well, C.L. Friedman, I think World Business, Phil Clement and Kyle happen to walk in at that moment, doing so much to bring businesses to Chicago.
Yes.
Continue to bring businesses or grow businesses that are here. Just today's newspaper, we could have had an entire session on three or four stories in today's paper.
Yes.
How's that going with getting companies here to relocate or expand?
Yeah, I think that our partners at World Business Chicago, I think under this administration, we are working hard to not just say, hey, choose Chicago, but ensure that they understand that Chicago is ripe for mega growth, for businesses to double down, for new businesses to come to our city. We've got an incredible workforce. We've got amazing universities. I mean, we've got amazing transit. Our transit is second to none. We've got beautiful lakefronts. I mean, why not? There's opportunity. I gave the example of some of our large sites. The land that we have, contiguous vacant land, you won't find that in some of our other big cities. This is an opportunity not just to choose downtown, but to choose Chicago and the other 76 community areas, right? Because we've got lots of opportunities. But partnership is key. World Business Chicago, you know, leading a lot of these efforts with the city of Chicago, is helping to continue to attract those businesses and create new jobs.
Great. I have, just before I move on, I have one or two more, but I would like to get some questions. I have some pre-submitted questions, and we do have Caleb's here. If you can come up, I think in a couple minutes we'll have a microphone and hopefully be able to get to a couple other questions. So get thinking. While we're working on that, I've got a question about the red tape, and I would get dragged out of here if I were to make an argument for red tape. So let me just say from the onset, I'm not making an argument for red tape. But oftentimes it's there for reasons, you know, and cutting the red tape is great, and I think everyone here appreciates that. But is there any risk there? Is there any, I'm thinking like, you know, there are some reasons are design or public safety or you know, there are things that could come into risk if say the tape is cut too far or too much. Where does that stand, and how is that going with some of the risk involved?
It's underway. And cut the tape isn't a suggestion. It's an executive order under Mayor Johnson, charging 14 departments, not just DPD, but 14 departments to really think about how we can be more efficient. I would challenge one thing that you said. I don't know that it was just red tape, but sometimes it felt like Gorilla Glue. And if I put on, you know, my development hat, you know, bureaucracy can get in the way of progress. I think that when we think about cutting the tape, two things can be true. You can mitigate risk and move fast at the same time. We're not sacrificing one for the other, and we don't have to. And so the examples that I gave of how we're cutting the tape, we're not compromising safety. We're not compromising architectural integrity. We're not compromising beautiful design. We'll never compromise that. What we're saying is we want to be far more collaborative, both with our development partners, our architects, our investors, but also between departments. What stops me from working closer with the Department of Buildings, with CDOT, with DOH? Nothing. And we're doing just that. We're far more efficient. The other thing I want to remind us, I mentioned at the top of our conversation that development is hard, not just in Chicago, but nationally. Time kills deals, and so we can't afford to slow down. That plan commission example was just one example. That's something that we can quantify, right? Going from 135 days, to 79 days on average to get projects through plan commission, it means that we get more cranes in the sky faster. I have yet to hear a complaint from one developer that we're moving too fast. In fact, my conversations during our intake meeting is, I can move as fast as you can. Are we ready to go? And I think that's a change in tune, and I think that's okay. And I will never say that we should slow down. No, there's ways for us to be even more aggressive. And so cut the tape is not a one-and-done thing. This is an iterative process. We'll continue to cut the tape. I want feedback from our developers. I've got developers in the room that have stood before Plan Commission and celebrated how fast our timeline is, how fast our approvals are. I've heard no complaints. If I get a complaint, I'll let you know.
We'll have you back. I'm going to ask one question that was pre-submitted. And does anyone have a question? Then Caleb can get to you with the microphone. There's no way that no one here has a question. Because I have plenty, but don't worry. We'll fill up plenty of time. But I'll come back and let you... get over your shyness. James Webb from the Fahoudi Foundation asked, what is the department's strategy to bring more jobs of the future to South and West Side neighborhoods beyond the recent announcement of P33 at the old U.S. Steel site?
Yeah, so when we talk about PsiQuantum at U.S. Steel, those are jobs of the future, and that doesn't stop there. Investment attracts investment, and development will continue to attract new development. I think that we've always had one of the diverse economies here in Chicago, in the world.
that won't change. With our, you know, universities, with new businesses choosing Chicago, there's only additional opportunities for growth. The one thing that I want to talk about is how do we support that growth? You heard me talk a little bit about workforce dollars. It costs to train. It costs to hire. We want to help to bridge that gap. And so while we're working aggressively with our partners to attract new industry and innovative jobs to our city, we have to be in a position to support that industry, to make sure that our Chicagoans have an opportunity to work in that industry. And so providing workforce dollars to those companies helps to ensure more equitable opportunities across our neighborhoods and local hiring. It's not enough to bring jobs from the coast, bring people from the coast. We've got the talent here, and we've got to tap in that talent, we've got to maximize that talent, and we have to provide resources so that talent can be used.
And as you mentioned earlier, housing, right?
Absolutely. A lot more housing. I'll say it one more time. 10,000 city-owned lots. We've got to activate those lots. Interesting fact, at one point, our lots, 70% of our lots were sold for open space and side yard. 70%. 30% for vertical,
sorry, would you repeat that?
Side yards and open space. 70%. 30% was allocated for vertical development. We've since switched that to 70% being prioritized for vertical development and 30% being set aside for open space and side yard. It's not because open space isn't important. Open space will remain important. But what we have to do is really think about building new units. We have to be more aggressive with building new units. The more units we can build, the deeper the affordability can be. Right? We've got to activate those vacant lots. We've got to get them back on the property tax roll. Retail follows rooftops. We often talk about food deserts. We talk about culinary deserts. We talk about deserts of all sorts, particularly on the south and west sides. You know what helps to address those deserts? More rooftops. We need more people. We need more density. And so we got to leverage our lots to create more housing opportunities and more vertical development opportunities. That helps economic investment drive into those neighborhoods. We've got to prime the pump. I can't wait for the private market to do it. We've got to take the lead. We've got amazing partners. We've got philanthropic partners in the room that are working hand in hand with us. We've got the private market working with us, and we have to do this work together a lot more aggressively.
Oh, we have a question. Please use the microphone.
Hi, Cindy Molas, Pritzker-Traubert Foundation. Thank you so much, Commissioner, for all you do for the city. You mentioned affordability. Can you talk to us a little bit? I'm not a developer. There's many of you in the room, but it's expensive to build affordable housing. So what does the city do to help developers help us?
Yeah, sure. Great question. So I'll talk from DPD's purview. When we talk about affordable housing, there's capital A affordable housing that's led by the Department of Housing, and that's deeply subsidized housing, right? When we talk about affordable housing, we're talking 30 to 60% AMI. What I'm referring to when I talk about missing middle is affordable home ownership opportunities that doesn't rely on low-income housing tax credits, which is a tool that's typically used to create capital A affordable housing. So our missing middle initiative leverages our city-owned lots. We sell those lots for a dollar, and we work directly with developers to provide developer subsidy. The cost to build is the cost to build, no matter where you're building. If I'm building in Lincoln Park, it costs the same from a construction standpoint as if I'm building in Inglewood. However, the appraised value is going to look very different depending on what neighborhood you're in. And so what we have to do is address that appraisal gap. And so our missing middle leverages the Housing and Economic Development Bond and provides up to $150,000 per unit to support this development. Not per lot, per unit. The other thing that's important is we're not talking single-family homes. We're talking 2 units up to 6 units. So that's doing a couple things. That gives the owner-occupant an opportunity to generate wealth because now you have rental income, and it creates more density in those neighborhoods. And so we've got to focus, again, on repopulation, and focusing more on 2 to 6 is a way for us to repopulate at a much faster pace. But again, I can't wait for the private market to figure it out and do it on their own because it'll never happen. We'll continue to see depopulation in those neighborhoods. And so what we're doing at DPD is working hard to prime the pump so that the private market can and will eventually do what it's intended to do. But we can't hope that developers figure it out. I'm really proud to say our first round, North Lawndale, was on the screen. We're talking over $40 million of new investment. These are local developers. These are developers who are from Chicago that are choosing these neighborhoods, and they're so excited to move forward. Such that we said, let's not go to one, but let's go to three Southside areas. Those areas that we have these vacant lots. We're far more transparent, we're far more collaborative, and we expect beautifully designed buildings. And so maybe you can come out once we break ground to see some of these developments, but they'll be game changers for our neighborhood.
Absolutely. Maybe we'll bring a City Club field trip.
I like that.
And maybe some of these developers that are starting with 1, 2, 3, maybe someday they're going to be building a $650 million stadium in their own city.
Yes.
Right? I mean, that's the dream.
Yes.
I see Mark.
How you doing?
Thank you've got it already. Look at how
microphone already. I echo Cindy's comments about what you do for Chicago.
And please introduce yourself, Mark.
Sorry. Mark Hopkins, Chicago Central Area Committee. Last month you spoke at our member meeting and you highlighted the opportunity with modular construction on perhaps city lots that might be construction ready by the city. Could you give us some info on that?
Yeah, I think we want to think outside the box. I mean, Missing Middle is one housing initiative. I'm not limited to just exploring one housing initiative. We've got to repopulate. We need more units online. And so whether we're talking modular housing or stick built, we've got to activate our lots. And we really need to think about more than just single family homes. Single family homes are okay. Don't get me wrong. I live in a single family home. But it's okay to have, thanks Dave, it's okay to have two units of to six units, right? It can be both and. And so I want to explore more creative ways to support private development that leads to more naturally occurring affordable housing and new construction. I want to say another thing, too. While, you know, capital A affordable housing or traditional affordable housing isn't in my purview, that's Department of Housing. I just want to acknowledge that our robust pipeline from planned development, we're talking 10,000 new housing units proposed. Guess what? We're talking about 20% affordability on site. And so it's our market rate developers that are helping us to bring more affordable, traditional affordable units online. And so it has to be a both and. Can't just be a focus on traditional affordable housing or market rate housing. We've got to do both, and we've got to do it more aggressively.
I like your both and I think that applies also, question up front here if we don't have, applies also to both the neighborhoods and downtown.
That's right.
Something that I'm hearing out of you more than we've heard in a while. Caleb's got one here, and then I know we have let's just call one more up here, because now I want to end with, oh shoot, where were you all earlier? Okay, let's go, we'll try to keep it quick.
Hello there. My name is Kyle Banker. I'm a planner with Crawford, Murphy, and Tilly. And last weekend with the hot weather got me thinking a lot about sustainability and climate resiliency with respect to existing development and future development. Just curious about how your office is thinking about making our places and our developments more sustainable for a hotter, more weather extreme future, and just what ideas are cooking about how to be able to square that circle to make our community more sustainable in the long run.
Great question. So we actually just updated our sustainable development policy, and it went into effect in January of this year. Our sustainable development policy hadn't been updated in over 7 years. And so while I talk a lot about development, you're absolutely right. We really need to think about sustainable development, right? Climate is changing and we need to really be thoughtful about that. And so our sustainable development policy charges developers to really think about how they're going to hit their goals with those sustainable components in mind. And so, you know, whether we're talking about LEED, you know, development, or we're talking about bird-friendly glass, there's different components as part of our sustainable development policy that we really want to amplify and highlight to encourage developers to think more thoughtfully about their projects. Now, I do want to add, you know, there's different measures, and we've changed kind of the order of these measures and the weighting of those measures in response to some of our advocates that have been very, very vocal about, for example, bird-friendly glazing. It matters, guys. It's really important. I've spent a lot of time researching bird-friendly glazing and bird-friendly design components. And it's important not just for our bird advocates. It's important for our climate. It's important for our buildings. And so one example of ways that we've used our sustainable development policy to respond to some of those concerns is it's not an ordinance. It's a policy. And we've changed the weighting to encourage developers to explore it. So when we have high-rise buildings, we want developers to choose bird-friendly glazing. We want them to consider bird design features that are friendly and welcoming so our birds aren't flying into a window. One interesting fact, in the last 5 months at Plan Commission, over 50% of our developers are adding more bird-friendly features to their policy, to their development. Now, again, they're doing that without it being an ordinance, without being forced to do so. So sometimes it takes a development policy and the revisions to a development policy to encourage developers to work with their architects and think about more climate-friendly features that they can incorporate in their design, not just residential development, but industrial development and development of all kinds. And so it is a priority. It will remain a priority. I think the recent update really articulates that it's important to me, to our department, to this administration.
We're hitting all the topics here. There you are.
Good afternoon. Rhonda McFarland with Quiet Communities Development Corporation in Bronzeville, a proud 2025 Pritzker Prize finalist.
Yes.
Yay. Thank you, Commissioner, for all you do. My question is, as organizations like QCDC and others who have been on the ground, boots on the ground, Mike, doing this work for many years, and we are trying to do locally focused, owned, controlled, and operated development to better our communities, what in your plan is leveling the playing field for us nonprofits that don't have the capital, don't have all the resources, and can use red tape and other policy changes and assistance that allow us to be able to compete, not replace our development partners, but compete on the small projects that we're trying to get through?
I think that's a great question. I think it's about partnership. One is articulating the need, but also is taking advantage of the resources. I gave an example of pre-development dollars, and I think that's an important one, right? It costs a lot of money to determine if a project is a go or no go. And if you think about developers that don't have as many resources or maybe doesn't have as much experience, that can be cumbersome. And so the example that I mentioned about us providing now new pre-development dollars to allow you to go and do a feasibility study, to allow you to engage an architect, to do some of the necessary soft work, soft cost work that's important to advance a project is one thing that we are really bullish on putting out. Now, you don't apply for a pre-development grant. You apply for the full grant. And we sit down and say, you know what? It's a great concept, but it's not quite ready for funding. The other thing that I would say is this is when you take those pre-development dollars and take that good concept into a great project and come back and reapply. We often hear developers and some of our businesses get a little frustrated. I didn't get approved the first round. Ask for a deficiency letter. Ask for a one-on-one. It takes time to fill out these applications, and we want to make sure that you're not frustrated doing that work. And so sitting down with our team to understand, A, how you can strengthen your application, what areas it was deficient, helps you to ultimately get the resources that you need. The other thing that I think is important is our partnerships that we have, whether it's our local chambers and our friends that are doing the important work, our SSAs that are in the community, our corridor managers, Wealth Our Way, which is the new initiative that was called out on Juneteenth to help create a community investment vehicle to help address local ownership for some of our smaller developers. We're trying to think outside the box and provide tools that we did not have before, but we always want to hear from our partners, right? We're partnering with philanthropy, we're partnering with our local boots on the ground, and we'll continue to do that. And we want to hear from you. What other resources are needed? What other technical assistance is needed? Our team, my team, is second to none. When I tell you the passion, the commitment, the brilliance on my team, they pull up their sleeves, they're holding hands, they're working with you guys, and I want to make sure that you all are all articulating those needs so that we can be respectful, responsive, and timely in addressing them.
Are you saying government's here to help?
Absolutely.
Marty, do you have our last question?
Hello.
And please keep it relatively quick so we can
yes.
get...
Hello, Marty Gutierrez with UIC. As I travel around the city, especially on the south and west sides, to visit friends and family, I see a lot of industrial areas that aren't corridors that aren't being utilized or vacant. Can you share a little bit about your plans on what you want to do there? I think there's so much opportunity with that land, and you know, we need open space, we need businesses. Can you share a little bit?
Yeah. Industrial jobs are important. They'll always be important, right? Industrial and manufacturing jobs are important. We've got 26 industrial corridors throughout the city. We've recognized that we have seen a shift over the last several decades in some of these industrial users. What we want to do is provide support. We have LEARIs. LEARIs are our local industrial retention initiatives. These are partners within these industrial corridors that are providing much needed support to the existing industrial users, but also working hard to attract new industrial users. In addition to that, we're not just waiting for the users to come. We've got industrial corridor plans that we're actively working on. We're providing resources to ensure that those industrial users have the resources to grow, scale, hire locally, and build capacity. And so for us, again, it's a both and. It's not just working hard to attract new industrial users, but it's making sure that we're supporting those long-standing industrial users. So between planning efforts, between providing resources to our LEARIs to ensure that we have boots on the ground to address those very unique challenges head on, and additional grant dollars, obviously, to do additional build out or scale. We stand committed. Industrial and manufacturing businesses and those jobs are important to the city, and they will always be important to the city. So we have to have resources to support them.
How long have you been doing this?
19 months, 2 weeks, and I'm joking. It's been, I think I'm hitting 19 months.
You seem to be built for this.
Is this
a dream job? I mean, how did? Let's end with you. How about? Pretty incredible to hear all this.
Thank you.
Where did you come from, and is this what you want to be doing with your life? You seem to have a pretty good handle on things.
Thank you. That's a huge compliment. Where did I come from, and what do I want to do with life? Is that the question?
Yeah.
Is that how we're ending?
How did this happen? How did you get that knowledge that you just shared with us is on so many different topics is really incredible. And I think it, you know, if there were more of you in city government and more of you in Chicago and in society, we'd be better off. I'm not biased and not partisan, of course, the City Club. But I can't deny that was pretty impressive.
You know, I love Chicago. I'm born and raised in Chicago. I'm a Southsider. I love Chicago. You know, it sounds cheesy, but this really is my love letter to the city. I love our city so much, and our city is amazing. It's second to none. Do we have challenges? Yes. Can those challenges be addressed? Yes, we're on our way. We've got new tools that we've never had before, and so I get excited. Yes, it's been 19 months. Some days it feels like 19 days. Some days it feels like 19 years, but I wouldn't trade it for the world. You know, I tell people this is a job of a lifetime, not a job for a lifetime. And so while I'm here, I want to make the best decisions to have the deepest impact and the most meaningful investment across all 77 community areas. It's a joy to do this work. It's an honor to do it alongside my amazing team. It's an honor to do it under Mayor Johnson's leadership. You all, our city is just on a path for additional greatness. And, you know, it's a joy to share the things that you all maybe don't see on a daily basis, but there's some amazing projects across our city. There's some amazing plans that won't just sit on the shelves as plans, but that are absolutely being activated to meaningful development and investment. I mean, I'm lucky to be in this seat. I'm having a lot of fun.
Because my real question was going to be, are you going to run for office or could
Never.
You run for office?
Absolutely not.
I just had
not.
To fumble around a little bit first.
Absolutely not. And I'll put that on record.
Well, thank you. I think everybody here and online watching would agree that was very insightful.
Thank you.
It seems to me we're on a great trajectory. I love that energy. I love that passion. And I love the projects. The proof is in the pudding and the investment, right? So there's some great things happening in Chicago. And it's because of so many of you that are in this room. Thank you, Commissioner Boatwright. But, of course, thanks to all of you who are making those investments, who are making those laws, who are making those, investments, philanthropy, business, bringing the jobs it's everybody here. That's City Club. And I just want to mention that and thank you, Commissioner. There's so much more to discuss. We hope you'll come back.
Yes, absolutely.
And we hope you'll all come back. We had a busy week this last week. We have another one. Mariana Spiropoulos, the clerk of the Circuit Court, is on June 26th. We have a program on revitalizing historically disinvested communities on July 9th with BMO and United Way. And then a couple of summer-type programs. We used to slow down in the summer, but why should we? Brookfield Zoo, New Era for Wildlife and Conservation, also in July. And what we're calling a watershed moment with the Shedd Aquarium, celebrating their strategic plan on August 20th. With so much more to come, but let's end on quite the high note today with the Commissioner of Planning and Development, Sierra Boatwright. Thank you so much for being here.
Thank you.